And welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 213. I am your host, James Gilmore, and for this Valentine's Day edition of the podcast, we've decided to keep things a little bit intimate tonight. So, just a two-man team. Joining me for this evening is none other than our resident Romeo, John Jordan.
Be careful, where are we going now? Hello, how are you, James?
Been a while, hasn't it? Way to go with it, John. How have you been, sir?
Yeah, busy. I was going to say, I've not done the podcast. Have I done one this year?
I don't know. This is a glorious return. No, it's been Keith and it's been Peter, but we haven't seen hide nor hair of you for a while. I take it you've been off cross-continental voyages and whatnot.
Not quite cross-continental.
No?
Cross-country, I suppose.
Ipswich. You've been hanging out in Shropshire or something.
No, cross-countries.
Okay.
Various countries. Fair enough. I spent 11 hours in Manchester Airport trying to get to Marseille. That was exciting. But I managed successfully went to Iceland to see Paradox.
Oh, cool.
The PC, kind of hardcore PC strategy developer who were moving into mobile. So they've got some interesting stuff. And then last weekend I was in St. Petersburg in Russia for a conference. I was giving a talk about how to do PR how journalists think.
I nearly went to Russia last year, but I took a skip on it because it was very like last minute. I hear the subways are amazing. That's the thing I hear about Russia.
I didn't go to the subways. The roads are quite dangerous, so maybe it would have been better off if I had gone down the subway. But, yeah, they drive like Billy-O, they're all over the place. St. Petersburg at least was very dirty. I'm sure it's lovely in the summer, but it's lots of dirty snow everywhere, so it wasn't. It's a very beautiful city apparently, but
not
really in the middle of February.
Oh well. Well, we've got a few interesting things up on the show tonight. We have information about Robert Bowling, the guy who did Call of Duty, his first mobile game, at least first one to appear on mobile anyway. A little bit of news about that. We've got the follow-up to the Real Racing 3 debacle we had last week. It's appeared, and there are some interesting reactions to it. And there's also some info about Galaxy on Fire Alliances coming up. So without further ado, let's head on over to the news. The Call of Duty franchise has had a sort of slightly rocky road in the mobile universe. The franchise has been hugely successful on consoles. It's had a couple of mobile versions. We've had some Call of Duty Zombies and first-person translations of the game, which some have fared pretty well, actually, but there's always been that slight difficulty with translating first-person shooters to iPads and touchscreen devices.
Something we might be talking about later.
Yes, more of which later, exactly. So Robert Bowling, who was one of the designers for a spell on the Call of Duty series, he worked for Infinity Ward, he has come up with a game for iOS which is sticking with the military theme, but is approaching it from a slightly different angle, a more strategic angle in this case. The game he's announced is called Breach and Clear, and it's due to appear on iOS devices sometime this spring. The idea of the game is, rather than it being a classic first-person military blast the crap out of everything, it's going to be a strategy affair. We've only had a few images, a few sort of like bits of concept art.
They're not really gameplay ones, are they?
No, we just had some. There's a couple of little pretty paintings, but there's one shot from the outside which seems to hint at what the game is going to be like, which is kind of a top-down view with a four soldiers lining up outside a room ready to sort of kick the door in with sort of orange circles around the base of them. It looks very RTS as in the presentation, but clearly it's going to be on a very, very small scale. So from what we can tell, you're dealing with a small squad of soldiers and you are planning ways in which you're going to kick a door in and clear a room of enemies. That's what it looks like anyway. They seem to be taking it very seriously. As in, they've gone in and they spent time with special ops agents from the past, like, 9 months or something. And apparently studied CQB theory. I don't know what that is, but it sounds militaristic. I should probably look that up.
Close quarter battle training.
Oh, okay. That would make sense. Yeah, okay. So they've done their homework, and they're obviously trying to take this to a very sort of serious-headed strategic level. Apparently, from what we've read, it's all about customization and detail. So you customize your weapon loadout, you tinker with your special ops unit, and you come up with all the various battle plans of how and in what way you're going to breach these rooms. Unfortunately, like you said, John, there's not much in the way of screenshots or anything like that, but there are a few pictures you can look at. If you just go to the site, type in Breach and Clear, you can have a little look at it. I'm sort of slightly more interested in this in some ways than I am the Call of Duty games, I suppose. Because of the fact that these sorts of games, these tactical strategy things, tend to work quite well on iPads and screen.
Well, these are direct control, isn't it? Direct,
yeah, exactly.
Kind of set out. I mean, it kind of actually reminds me a little bit of the Rainbow Six games, which I mean, they're more like PC kind of things, but and it's kind of interesting that you could play them as kind of first person, or are they first person or third person? I can't remember. First person, I think.
Yeah.
But then also, you had the option to literally do it as a strategy game, so you didn't take control of your troops at all. You just literally laid out the routes they would take and what they would do at certain times.
Uh-huh.
And so within that community, there was like a hardcore group of people who, you know, would literally set out their attack without knowing kind of where the enemy were and just let the guys play it out. The interesting thing is that this one's going to be free to play, so it's kind of, guess with all these things, I guess this will be a thread running through the podcast, is how do you monetize that, really? I mean, it's kind of always a problem with free to play, is how do you have enough kind of skill progression in the game that people who want to get better at the game feel like they're doing it, and if they want to pay, they can, but they don't feel like they've hit a wall they have to breach and clear with their wallet.
Uh-huh, there you go. Uh-huh. Well, it's true. I mean, it's all about trying to balance how much you keep away from players, keep out of reach, but if you hold too much back, then are you just going to put them off and they're going to drop the game within half an hour? But like I say, from a control aspect, I'm sort of more interested in this than the average first person shooter, and obviously with Robert Bowling's name attached to it, it'll have some Call of Duty fans excited. He's already got tied into one game which we mentioned a while back called Human Element, which is going to be coming, they said mobile devices. I know it's been mentioned that it might be appearing on Ouya or Ouya, or however you pronounce it, the Android on console, as we're referring to it, and possibly iOS as well, but that's not supposed to be appearing until 2015.
I was going to say, that's so far off, it's kind of, who knows if it's going to turn up. I mean, that's
if and when. But so it looks like this will be probably the first game of his to appear online. So we'll have to see how it turns out. But we'll just jump straight into the main story of the week. We covered last week news of Real Racing 3's imminent arrival. The announcement of the game that it was going to be coming out globally on the 28th of February was obviously met with excitement from many. But it was followed closely by the rumor that it was going to be free to play. Jeff Scott from 148 Apps, one of our sister sites, had written an article where he'd looked at the unlockables and the sort of achievements within the game and had decided that it looked like it was going free to play. So we did a little conversation about will it, won't it, what would happen if it did, do we care? Soon afterwards, after the podcast, it was confirmed that it was. And now it's been released a kind of soft launch in Australia and New Zealand. They threatened to do it in the US, but also in Canada, but it hasn't appeared there yet. So at the moment, just in the Antipodean areas, it's out now, which means people have played it. And our deputy editor, Mark Brown, has played it. He went to a preview event, so he's had a pretty lengthy hands-on. So now we know a good deal more about the game, and specifically the freemium model. Starting with the game itself, apparently it plays well, which shouldn't come as any surprise to the series. Well, you know. I mean, have you played any of the previous ones before, John?
Yeah, I've not played this one.
But you've had a bash at the previous ones. Because, you know, it plays, from everything we've heard, pretty much the same. Obviously, a lot of the braking is handled automatically and you take control of the steering. And you've got real licensed cars. It looks utterly fantastic. And, you know, it's gained a big following as a result of it. So all that's very much intact. And they've added this time-shifted multiplayer element, which is this way that you can race other people's ghosts when they're not actually playing, which sounds like it could be quite fun. It's a novel approach to the multiplayer thing. The issue that has arisen that's caused the most controversy, though, is the monetization. It's gone free to play. It seems that most of the monetization is based around repairing your car in order to keep it running and make it race-worthy for the next race. So, you know, after every race, if you've crashed into something, then you're going to take a little bit of damage. In order to get the car back up to speed, you're going to have to issue repairs. Repairs will cost in-game currency. Now, this currency is obviously earned through play, but you can obviously pay to boost it up as well. If you choose not to pay any money, you will have to wait for periods of time. So, for example, if you something as small as like a brake light is the example given, that might take like a minute to repair. Whereas if you need to rebuild your engine, that's going to take 3 hours. So you can either wait for those periods of time, or you can inject money into the game and just keep playing constantly. The problem is, and there's been a few people who've mentioned this, so obviously whoever's played it, they've done some maths, and even some of our commenters have done the same thing. They've worked out that if you were to play constantly, if you want to carry on playing like you would play a normal game, it would wind up costing you somewhere within the region of about $6 an hour, which is, well, a lot, I suppose. I mean, what it seems to me is that this kind of monetization system, this model based around waiting, which a lot of freemium games are based around a waiting and an energy system. So you can play for short bursts, then you have to take a pause and pick it up again later. For many people, casual players specifically, that's fine, because they don't want to play for 10 hours every day constantly. They pick it up for little bits and put it down again. So by the time it comes around to the next play session, everything's charged up and they're ready to go. No harm, no foul. Thing is, real racing has always been kind of a premium experience, and it's attracted a particular kind of crowd, a crowd who are willing to pay $2.99 or $4.99 for a mobile game. And they've kind of invested a lot of time in it in the past. And there has been a pretty negative reaction from the, I suppose, hardcore crowd, inverted commas, who have, you know, tried to play it as they would usually play it, and then suddenly find themselves locked out after 15 minutes.
Well, I mean, to be fair, obviously it's not been released generally yet, so it's kind of... I think there's a knee-jerk reaction as soon as anything goes free-to-play that people don't like it. I'm sure some of the fans don't like it. I mean, And obviously we haven't played it, so we can't really give our own personal kind of view on exactly how it works. I think the biggest problem that EA had about it is obviously this game's been in development for a long time. We've known about it for a long time. Now, whether it was designed to be free to play from as it was designed, it's kind of difficult to judge, because originally the first two games were developed by the developer Firemint, and then they got bought by EA, and then they got merged with another EA developer in Australia called Iron Monkey. So now it's called Fire Monkey. So, and as Firemint, obviously they did have in-app purchases in Real Racing 2, but it was a premium game with in-app purchases, which is a completely different kind of way of approaching.
Yeah, little extra.
Kind of a model. And as soon as you go free-to-play, there's just... The only way you really monetize is, and we're seeing it all the time, and we're going to discuss it again later in the podcast, is you have to basically put in restrictive time as a kind of because to get people to pay, it really doesn't work. You can't just sell extra kind of, you can't just kind of go, are you going to buy extra cars? I mean, that can be something, but because these games, I mean, it probably costs a couple of $1 million to make that game.
Yeah, this is an expensive game to produce, absolutely.
So, Real Racing 2 was rumored to be one of the first mobile games to be over $1 million to develop. That's kind of the problem. And obviously, with CSR Racing, is a great example of a game that probably didn't cost that much to make, but has, you know, monetization throughout it. I mean, I played it and didn't spend any money and stopped playing it, but because I kind of thought the monetization was just a little bit too much, but it's been massively successful. So, you know, developers effectively want to pay their staff and be successful, so they kind of follow that kind of model. So I just think the biggest problem is EA from the get-go should have come out and said Real Racing 3 is going to be free to play and had a discussion with the fans, because it's had a big community.
Yeah.
And basically what they've done is, 2 weeks before it comes out, they basically told everyone, this game you really love, well, we're completely changing the way you've played it before. And I don't think it's so much that it has in-app purchases. I think the damage thing is in a sense quite a nice way of doing it, because it's, you can kind of understand if your car was damaged in some way, it wouldn't go so far. So there is a coherence to the gameplay involved in that as a design.
It makes sense within the universe. Yeah.
Yes, but the issue is they've had two games creating that universe, creating a fan base for that kind of universe of how you want very high-end console-based car racing. And then suddenly you've just basically, you should have had, that game should have had a new title, you know, because you're kind of basically just kind of like, I don't know, I'm not quite pissing all over the what happened before, but a little bit like that.
No, that's not right.
That's not how people have consumed that game. People have played it. I'll spend $5, and I'll play it as much as I like. And it's a big issue, I think, for the free to play game designers. The other really big thing that they're scared of is they want to restrict how much people play their game. What they really want to do is they want to stretch it out for a couple of months. Mm. They want people to be playing their game regularly for a couple of months. They really don't want the console experience where people spend $6, but you know, you buy a console game and pretty much you kind of rush through it. It's kind of like, oh, that's the excitement. Yeah. In a lot of these games, and when I was talking to the CSR Racing guys about it, because I thought it was a really weird decision to limit you to whatever it was, 7 minutes, and then effectively you had to pay or get kicked out. And they were like, no, we really want to stop people just burning through the content and finishing the game in a week, because then after they finish that game, they'll just leave it, you know. And what they want to do in this game as a service thing is they want to keep people moving through gradually, and then they can update with more content and take them, you know, as new cars, new, you know, modes and stuff. So it's a big move, and so whether we say that's right or not, right or wrong, I mean, that's kind of a bit in the eye of the beholder. But I think it is sad for real racing fans who are really looking forward to Real Racing 3 to be, you know, it is synonymous with being the best racing experience you can get on iOS. And now that experience has been fatally kind of compromised just by the monetization.
It's the wrong game for this kind of model, at least in terms by what they're obviously trying to do is, by making it free to play, they're going to attract a whole new audience of casual players who weren't necessarily prepared to fork out a fiver for it.
Yeah, and I think you're completely right. I mean, the thing is, because it's a fairly hardcore game, it's not like Farmville, where I mean, I guess it's very casual, but that would have a very, very big audience.
Yeah.
You know, anyone could play that game. Whereas obviously half the people who play Farmville are not going to play Real Racing, because it's basically going to be a guy probably, I don't know, 8 to 28 or something, you know, or 38, you know. And even compared to CSR Racing, where basically all you do is tap 3 times on the screen to play. Yeah. You know, it's not a driving game at all. You know, and the success of that game is because it went very casual. The people who love cars, but people who, like me, who kind of like, oh, I'll try it out. I don't really like racing games personally myself. Mm. But I'll try it out, see what it's like. For real racing, you know, I think if it, we'll see if it fails or not. I mean, from the biz side, I've been checking to see how it's grossing. And in New Zealand, it's grossing. It was in the top 35. It's top 35 now, not top 35. But in Australia, it's not even in the top 100. It's
really?
The top grossing game yet. Okay, it's only not been out for a day yet. So, but I kind of think the problem is its audience might be a little too niche. Because really, you probably need, I suppose, iPad 1 won't run it. Probably iPad 2 won't run it that well. So you need to be kind of someone who's on who updates every year. It's not the kind of game you probably want to play on your iPhone, is it, really?
I've seen people do. I've had a go on Real Racing 2 on an iPhone. It was okay.
But it's not the experience, is it? Whereas obviously you can play some of these kind of more Kingdoms of Camelot. You know, you're almost like better on a phone because graphically they're not so impressive.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I think it's, and I think obviously kind of underlying all this is this fact that EA made is unbelievable. They made $23 million in the last 3 months on the Simpsons game. I mean, it's actually generating, I think, no, it's almost generating as much money as Clash of Clans now, that Simpsons game.
Astonishing license.
Which is staggering, because at least with Clash of Clans, you say, well, they did something new. You know, Supercell did something new there, or you know, brought together various things into a slightly new package that hadn't been done certainly on iOS before. If the Simpsons came, it's just like, oh, okay.
One of these, only it's got Simpsons in it, yeah. But then it's made a staggering amount of money. In fact, there's more updates. They released the Valentine's Day update for this month, and I'm sure that's attracted a bunch of people. But yeah, it seems a shame. By trying to court a new audience, it seems like the Real Racing 3 guys have lost the support of their core. And you're right, it's the kind of game that you need to play on a high-end device, and people who are prepared to update every year and have the money to fork out for an iPad 3 the moment it comes out are probably willing to, you know, spend a fiver on the racing game. Whereas, you know, if the free play audience, they'll have a bash, but I don't know, they have essentially flicked the Vs at all the pre-existing fans. And obviously the commentators who are annoyed are much more likely to commentate. So I'm sure there are plenty of people who are like, eh, I don't mind. But there has been a sort of a decent outpouring of ire on both online, both on like Twitter and our pages and stuff like that.
But equally, it's kind of funny. When I was at this conference in Germany, I won't say who the companies were, but we were sitting in the bar after one of the days of the conference and just chatting about free to play. And one of the designers, this from a Russian company, was just like, "We need to get the audience, and we need to twist, you know," he's like with the, he's gesturing with his hands, "we need to like squeeze the money out of them." Really, I mean, really, he was like, "Rrr!" And like all the more Western European guys were sitting around going, "Whoa, hold on." He's like, "No, we need to force them to give us money. This is how it is. If they don't complain, we're not forcing them hard enough."
I've heard that. People aren't complaining, you're doing it wrong. Yeah.
And to be fair, that the company he works for is very successful in the games they make. And amazingly, the proof was, you know, he ate his own dog food, or whatever the phrase is. You know, he said in one game he spent $5,000.
Whoa!
It's like, whoa. So, you know, I think maybe in certain kind of national groupings, there's a different. And certainly the Russians and the Chinese, they've always been a bit more free to play because of problems with piracy. So.
Sure.
I mean, it's not quite so radical, but they've just announced this week they're going to do Tetris Blitz. So it's basically
That's right.
It's the first free-to-play version of Tetris, so it's like the Bejeweled Blitz. So basically, you get 2 minutes to get a high score as possible. Basically, it's like it's like social, so it's embedded. You know, you're playing against your Facebook friends, and it's the leaderboards reset every week or so. So
I'm curious to see, because I read about it. I'm curious to see how you monetize that then, because
there's power-ups.
If it's power-ups, then that really is going to be pay to win, isn't it? With Tetris, you've got 2 minutes to clear it. If you buy extra power-ups, then you're obviously going to be put in a better position to be able to get a higher score than those who don't buy power-ups. Ergo, that's pay to win.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to wait until February the 28th to try Real Racing 3 for ourselves in the US and the UK. But obviously it'll be free to do so. So you can have a bash and make up your own mind. I'm sure the controversy will run and run, but we'll have to wait and see ourselves. But there is another game that has gone. Actually, am I going to say free to play? I think has it gone free to play?
What
I'm going to say, Galaxy on Fire, Alliances.
Yes, that is a free to play game. That's the first free to play game from Fish Labs.
It is. So there's another what you would consider a relatively premium franchise, the Galaxy on Fire games, which have been sort of set the graphical benchmark for a while. Certainly the second one was incredibly pretty, space exploration game where you run around shooting things and docking with space stations and doing a bit of trading and whatnot. The new game that they're working on is an MMO RTS, which is going to involve, well, less ship-to-ship combat and more trading, mining, I presume, that sort of thing. I understand you've gone and had a look at it, John.
Yeah, actually, yeah. When we were in St. Petersburg, the Fish Labs guys were there, so they had a kind of. I mean, it's still quite early. It's like in an alpha version, so it's not. It's a Q3 release, so we're assuming kind of September, October, maybe more October, right. Really. So it's a very different approach. I mean, I guess it's an interesting comparison with Real Racing, because obviously the Galaxy on Fire game is all about is space combat trading, and it's always been a premium game, even though they basically did add in-app purchases into it.
And extra campaigns and stuff you could buy.
Yeah, and they've done like traditional kind of expansions as well. Anyway, but this is completely different. So this is kind of set within the universe of, and kind of obviously uses in the terms of the ship, the fleet side of it, you use the ships that you know from the Galaxy on Fire.
Gotcha.
Kind of canon or whatever they call it. And it's there's three different races that you kind of choose and play off each other.
Okay.
But basically, I mean, it's not quite at the level of a kind of Command and Conquer, but basically you start off with just a planetary globe, and you kind of place buildings around it. So you kind of like rotate around and place. And there's three different resources. So there's like a gas one, a metal one. There's another one, an energy. I can't remember. There's one. And then there's like a hard currency, which is the one you buy, and then you can transfer it into these other ones. But basically, you're going around kind of the usual kind of thing, building up your kind of mining facilities to mine resources, and you're kind of building buildings to create kind of marines and build up your spaceships and technology trees, all that, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think from that point of view, there's nothing particularly novel they're doing. They're just bringing it to the Galaxy on Fire universe. But then obviously you kind of build up your planet, and then you go and attack other planets. And there's different you can get different resources on different planets, or they just have slightly different kind of characteristics of what you can mm-hmm. build on them. So you have up to 10 planets in your solar system. But the whole point is, obviously, you might have gathered from the Alliance's bit of the title, is it's going down the Alliance's clans, guilds, kind of scheme of things. So
okay.
And that's really the main focus. So obviously, at the moment, everyone's looking at kind of like Clash of Clans as a big success and kind of seeing how they can kind of take that kind of gameplay and do something a bit more on it. So they're looking to do a lot more on the Alliances. They've not really revealed too much about how. What they're going to be doing on that, but I'd imagine it'll be not quite at the Eve level of Alliances, but kind of moving towards that level of it's guilds, isn't it? In Eve, but that kind of thing. So you're building up big kind of massive fleets and having kind of star battles and
okay. So is it mostly is it like space combat or is it ground sort of planetary combat?
No. Well, it's kind of, I mean, like many of these games, I don't really know how they're going to represent the combat.
Okay.
I don't know whether that will. I mean, you're not in control of that element. So there'll be a kind of not pre-calculated, but there'll be, you know, basically a kind of automatic system, maybe with some randomized kind of things thrown in about who wins the battles.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And there may be some sort of kind of wrapped around in some sort of cutscene about what happens, but.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is more the resource side of things, and then how these alliances kind of work, and how you have diplomacy between them, and on that level. So it's so it's kind of almost same kind of real time strategy. And it is in a way, but it's not quite in that direct control.
Kind of, yeah. Funny enough, the most recent Command and Conquer game that's gone soft launch in Canada, I think, at the moment. It's been out on PC for a while.
I was just looking at that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's. Similar in the way that it's more focused on the resource management and the mining of the Tiberium. It's called Tiberium Alliance. I think it's Tiberium Alliances as well.
It's very similar because you can in that one you create your troops and then set up waves of attacks.
That's right, and just let them go off.
So you select the units in the attack, but then you don't have any control.
No.
Exactly what they do, which is, I mean, it's interesting because I kind of think the one thing that Clash of Clans did do that was kind of quite. Not important, but I think made it work a little bit better than those other games. Is you could, I mean, okay, you're placing your troops in a fairly random, you know, pathfinding manner. You don't really have a lot of control over them, but at least you have some control over where they're going.
Sure.
And you have, and obviously you have control over the timing of when you put them into the battle, which is can be kind of, I guess, it's not really strategic, more tactical. But
it's difficult because you can, especially with RTS games, there is the danger of feeling detached from what's going on. And
I think the biggest problem with all these kind of strategy games is it's almost impossible not to just fall into the trap of doing a tank rush. I mean, you just basically you just get the biggest units you can and then like just pile them all in together.
I know people who spend their entire teenage lives doing that.
I mean, I kind of feel that often boils down to basically that. I mean, you try and be clever and go, oh, I'm going to have these guys are going to attack the kind of like anti-aircraft, you know, missiles, and then they're going to send the kind of balloons in and stuff. But effectively, one bit of timing goes awry, and then just the whole thing falls apart. And you just go, oh, I'm just going to get some barbarians and just
stomp everything. yes, it's a classic tactic. So we're not going to be seeing this till end of the year. Well, September, late end of the year. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it's in Q3. So I mean, I don't think it's been. I'm not sure how long it's been in development. I mean, I think for Fish Labs, obviously they're working. They're doing other games in the Galaxy on Fire universe still.
They're still working on 3, aren't they? So.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of. I think there's lots of things that they're looking to do, but I mean, those games just take a long time to make. You know, obviously.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a kind of a experiment. So I don't think it's supposed to be. You know, they're not really designing it to be a massively in-depth strategy game. They're just kind of like something while people are waiting, maybe a little bit for the next Galaxy on Fire.
A bit different. Well, that'll be interesting. I'm up for
it. It will be interesting.
And speaking of a little bit different, we mentioned earlier on in the podcast when we're talking about first-person shooters and their sort of troubled translation onto mobile devices. The dual-stick control systems that you have on consoles, when you try and transfer that to a touchscreen with a floating little thumbsticks, often doesn't work quite as well. There's never been a really good way around it. People have tried using external controllers. Gameloft launched their own actual physical controller that you could use for the iPad, but you know, that means you're carrying around peripherals and it's a bit of a faff. So people are still trying to discover the best way to replicate or approximate first-person shooter controls on an iPad. A developer called Scattered Entertainment have waded into the fray to try and offer an alternative, a new approach to the first-person control system. One which, rather than using two thumbs, only uses two fingers. You can literally hold the thing in one hand and control every aspect of the game using just two fingers. The game is called The Drowning. It's a first-person zombie shooter that merges elements of, I suppose, RTS games in terms of pointing and clicking. First-person shooter in terms of the way the game actually plays out. You are running around shooting zombies. Mm. But their hook is they looked at all the first-person shooters, decided that it really they weren't cutting the mustard, the dual floating sticks weren't very good, and so they gathered together a group of like 500 gamers and basically polled them to say, what do you like about touchscreen games? What don't you like? What are the good and bad points of these control methods? And what would you like to see? And off the back of that, they've developed this new control system. Now, you've seen this as well, haven't you? Or at least you saw a talk about it.
Yeah, I've spoken to Ben Cousins, who's the general manager. It's an interesting setup that they've got there, because, I mean, Ben used to work at DICE.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got people from Crytek and people who've worked on Halo. I mean, they've got a fairly experienced team.
Good pedigree there, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, Scattered is owned by DNA, the big Japanese kind of free to play company who does the Mobage platform. So they've kind of well funded and being experienced guys, particularly in the shooter genre, they're kind of looking to do something different. So in terms of the controls. I mean, without the game's not out till March, so no one's played it, so it's kind of a bit hard to judge. But there's actually a video on Pocket Game at the moment, where Ben kind of goes. It's a very good video actually, how he explains kind of how it all works. And I think that the other thing before we get exactly into the controls, it's they were quite thoughtful how they kind of approached this game, because they kind of realised. You know, on console stuff, we're doing. You know, the whole focus really is multiplayer now. Really, I mean, the single player is a kind of like a training mode, isn't it? But it's all about multiplayer.
Certainly, with first person shooters, yeah. It's
yeah.
All about.
So, but the thing is, with kind of touchscreens, you can't really do, or mobile devices, you can't really do that, because you just can't guarantee the connection. So, obviously, the person with the best connection is going to win and go back to the original days of kind of Quake and stuff. Everyone was on dial-up. So that doesn't really work. So basically, they've got to come up with a first person, with a kind of basically a single player kind of mode.
Mm.
And obviously, it's free to play, because DNA, that's all they do, is free to play games. So they've basically got to kind of work out how you can kind of, within that, those restrictions, kind of come up with something. So what they've ended up doing is and it comes back to this time restriction thing, they've ended up, it's like an arena based system. It's like a zombie apocalypse, and there's kind of, the backstory is all this kind of like some weird oil starts pumping out of the sea, and everyone who goes into it kind of comes back as zombies and blah, blah, blah.
Goo.
So that's the drowning. You're kind of drowned into this zombie goo, and then you come up. And they've kind of combined some interesting mechanics. So you have this, for each kind of location you go into, you have like just 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a high score thing, where you're kind of running around, and I mean, they're zombies, so they don't have guns, they're not firing back at you, so that kind of also means the control system doesn't need to be so twitchy as you'd expect, maybe.
Sure, what you're saying, you have a little bit longer to react to the shambling guys approaching.
And they haven't got guns, and they're not like leaping at you or anything. So the control system is, you basically touch wherever you want to go in the map, and you see like a little kind of white hemisphere appears where you mm-hmm. tapped. And it has some automatic pathfinding if you tap some weird place. But the whole point is just what you'll probably be doing is you'll be tapping kind of quite regularly.
Yeah.
You know, to because that's kind of like moving you around. And obviously that's kind of, instead of having, I mean, it's interesting thing is, instead of having like a direct stick control to where you move, you're kind of like using this kind of tap system as like a more kind of indirect kind of movement system.
So it's much more like an RTS in terms of you point and click where you want to go, but obviously you're seeing it from a first person perspective.
Yeah. But then the clever thing they've done is, I mean, you can broadly swipe to move the camera
mm-hmm.
while you're moving. So that kind of gives you, those two combinations kind of give you the kind of the camera movement and the gun movement. And then you basically, you tap with two fingers to fire, with the center point between those two fingers being where you fire. So there's no kind of auto aiming. So if you just want to hit something, then obviously you can do that quite easily. But if you want to do a headshot, then that's much harder.
It's a tough thing to do. I was sort of fascinated by that when you saw it. Mm. So you're placing two fingers on the screen, and the gun will actually aim at the exact center point between your two fingers.
And the nice thing about the way it all works, or should work, is you've stripped out the gun aiming to the movement of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, when you're firing, you're not really moving your character around. You're not moving the camera around. You're just kind of tapping on the screen where these kind of enemies are coming.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like deconstructing how the process of how you would do a first person shooter with a dual stick or a mouse and keyboard. So obviously a lot of this kind of stuff, it'll depend on exactly how the enemies work. And there is, to be fair, a 180 degree quick rotation button as well.
So this is your alternative to whip around if you need to.
Yeah, I think it's not on the level of a real Racing 3, but I think where people might find some issues with it being free to play, you basically get 2 minutes, and it's all kind of score based. So you kill the zombies, you get points. You get headshots, you get more points. Blah blah blah. And then the points, then you go into a scavenge mode, which is effectively like a kind of slots thing. So you basically do the 2 minutes, you get your score, and then you get a certain amount of items that you scavenge just randomly. Kind of given items,
right?
And you can pay a bit of money to get like a flare to effectively kind of get more time in the location to find more kind of items.
Oh,
but then it's effectively in the game lore, it's kind of repopulated by the zombies and you have to leave. So basically what you're doing is it's a bit like we've spoken before about card battlers, and that's all about collecting cards and combining them. So this is a less abstract version of that. So you're collecting, so you might get like a bit of tape, or you might get a battery, or you might get a gun magazine, or you might get, you know, so you're collecting these kind of objects that can be used combined together. And there's also like a gun yard which you can pay to get access to, and again you're going through a similar kind of, there's no enemies in that, but you're going through a similar kind of randomized slot collection of items. But you may get like a broken AK-47, but then you go back into the game to find the bits you need to repair it. So you can't just go, oh, I've got a broken AK. You can't buy a broken AK-47 and then buy the bits you need.
Right.
So they're kind of layering in the game. You have to play the game to get the bits you need.
Yeah.
Although some of them may be rarer than others. So you have to pay to go to this gun yard more often So it's kind of interesting. It's very Japanese. Obviously, the DNA being a Japanese company, they make billions of pounds a year. So they're very good at this kind of randomized thing.
Mm.
So hopefully, I think the idea is Ben with his, because it's a game designed for Western audiences. It's not designed. I mean, it may get released in China, probably not in Japan, because they don't like first person shooters very much. But with all these kind of things, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Does it see exactly how smooth or how
sure
harshly they do it? But
it's nice to see someone just taking a run at it from a different angle.
But it is. No, I think it does look very. It looks a beautiful game. It's made using Unity, but you know, they're experienced guys, so it does look very nice. And but again, they're using this 2 minute kind of loop to stop people just burning through and going and playing through the game. Because this one's a bit different, because it's not an endless game. There's kind of like some sort of storyline for the first bit, and you kind of work your way through it. I guess you can replay levels to try and get higher scores and things. And they're also going to be introducing, after the game's released, they're going to be releasing like an asynchronous kind of boss raid
mode. Right, okay.
So you can kind of basically, there'll be these massive bosses that if you want to, you can skip over them, but if you want to play, you know, you attack them, and then your friends attack them, and then over time, hopefully, if enough of you play, you'll kind of kill the boss, and then the loot will be kind of spread between you.
Yeah.
And I think it's because as we've said, first person shooters have not done very well on touchscreen devices. And I remember, famously, there was when it released Rage, everyone moaned because of course they dealt with the control method by putting it on rails.
It was rail shooter, wasn't it?
Which isn't way more honest, because then you're just controlling the gun, but everyone hates it. And, you know, and I guess the other thing is like Infinity Blade it's not a shooter, but you know, it dealt with the control method in a very thoughtful manner. You know, so I think it's a very high quality of game. I think it will appeal to lots of people. Quite, you know, all these things. Obviously, they need to make money, otherwise they won't be updating it for the next 12 months. But obviously, it's a very high profile title for DNA, so I'm sure they'll be spending a lot of marketing money and won't want it to. I'm sure it'll be supported for a certain length of time.
Sure,
because they won't want to release it, and then
it's one of the few first person shooters I've seen where I look at it, and because of the novel control scheme, you're like, I actually do want to have a go at that. I want to see how that plays. I want to give it a try, whether it works or
Absolutely.
Not. Don't know, but it's nice to see someone experimenting and, you know, trying something a little bit different.
And that's always, the weird thing. You kind of think the games industry is very kind of innovative and always trying new things, but there's certain things it kind of gets really stuck on. And as soon as it got a touchscreen, people just wanted to do like twin sticks and do, you know.
I think people were
fall back to the
They were captured by the idea of being able to have like a console on their hand. When the graphics started getting better, they're like, we could do a Call of Duty. This would be amazing.
Yeah.
Without thinking, no, it wouldn't be amazing though, because the controls don't work. But it's like, no, because that's one of the biggest selling games, the Halos and the Call of Duty, were like, no, we'll do Nova and we'll do, you know, Modern Warfare and it'll be brilliant. But it just wasn't. No. So, well, this one will be an alternative take. It's coming out apparently sometime in March on iOS devices.
Yeah.
So that's sort of something to look forward to. Well, certainly, I mean, if it works, could be a start of a whole new wave of first-person shooters. Mm. If not, it'll be a glorious, you know, a glorious failure. But
nice.
We'll have to see. Could be good.
Yeah.
Obviously, have to wait to March for those. But we have had some games coming out this week that we should probably tell you about.
Okay.
So let's go over to the new releases. First up on this week's new releases, we have a game from Recoil Games called Rock Runners. It is a auto runner in the vein of almost every other game released on iOS at the moment. It's about a young-looking space mining bloke who charges about alien planets looking for jewels and gemeralds. It's a mining-themed thing, so he's avoiding kind of spinning mechanized equipment and things that are going to tear him to pieces. He's jumping between platforms and doing all the usual auto runner stuff. It got a silver award from us. The kind of criticism was that maybe it gets a little bit too easy at times, but the upside is it plays very well, incredibly responsive, really, really handsome visuals and stuff, and a nice kind of mixture of obstacles. You're jumping over sort of toxic goo and you're dodging a little spinning blades and all that sort of stuff. But it goes over a few levels, different environments, really, really looks the part. Maybe could have been a bit tougher, but sort of well worth a look. So Rock Runners, you can find that now on iOS and iPad. It's got in-app purchases in it. I don't know if it's free to play or not. I'll let you check that one out. One that I was really interested in, I don't know if you've seen this one, John, but this caught my eye. It's called Rotola.
Okay.
It's developed by a guy called Prior Games. There's kind of a history behind this. The company are trying to release these micro games. They've got a project where they're going to release 8 games for this year, for next year. And the idea is they're sort of made in a relatively short time, released, and they move on to the next thing.
Okay.
In this case, because hexagons are now the thing, it's Super Hexagon meets Tetris, in the sense of you've got a hexagon in the middle of the screen, and blocks are emerging from the center of this hexagon. So in the same way that blocks appear at the top of the screen in Tetris, you'll get like maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 blocks. Doof, they appear in the center of the screen. Then you can spin around and choose which orientation you want the blocks to appear in, and then you tap and the blocks will fly out to the perimeter of the hexagon. The idea is the blocks are all different colors, and like a match 3 puzzle, whenever colored blocks touch one another, they disappear in the same way as you match up lines in Tetris. And the idea is obviously to keep going for as long as you possibly can and spawn as many blocks as possible before it all piles in on the center and game over. Notably, the soundtrack is by the guy who did the soundtrack for Silent Hill. So it's Akira Yamaoka. I'm a Silent Hill guy, so it doesn't sound like Silent Hill. He's very much rocking a sort of 80s synth funk thing here, rather than the usual eerie, swirly stuff. I really liked the look of it. It's very it's obviously very lo-fi, but it's done in a very sort of smart way, and it looks it's interesting idea.
Okay, I guess if you play it, you're not going to be amazed by any novel gameplay, but it just looks just a slightly different way of packaging it up.
Exactly, it's a twist on the Tetris thing, and so there will be more of these coming, more to follow in 2014. It's £1.49 or $1.99 on the App Store, and that's out now, so you can check that out if you like. What else have we got? Oh, here's one. I'll be talking about it a bit more later, but I'll just touch on it now. It's a game called Relic Rush. It is a pixel art game developed by Crescent Moon Games. It's pretty much made by one guy, Jason Pickering from the Crescent Moon House. It is a sort of auto runner platformer which reverses the controls. So rather than touching to jump, you actually touch to stop where you are. And that allows you to sort of navigate through a few levels. I'll talk about it more a little bit later. It's quite interesting. I'll save it to later. But you can get that now at 69p 99 cents on the App Store. Let's do this because it's daft. A Good Day to Die Hard.
Dear.
The film that's getting absolutely kicked around the box office at the moment by awful reviews. It's like 5% on Rotten Tomatoes or something. Yeah. They've said it's just killed the franchise, stone dead.
The last one was quite good, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, I wasn't a fan, but it was all right.
It was all right.
Four wasn't a disgrace or anything. It was just meh. Whereas this apparently is properly dreadful.
Proper.
But naturally, it's a new film, so it's got a tie-in video game, because it has to. Following in the line of Brave and The Hunger Games, we've gone for a Endless Runner, but it's, I don't know, you're not playing as Sean McClane, first of all, you're playing as his son, who I can only assume is a character in the new one, because I've never heard of him before.
Yeah, yeah. It's the whole point of it, isn't it? It's father and son.
Yeah, well, right, fair enough. I'll take your word for it because I'm not watching. So he's basically charging through an abandoned Chernobyl power plant, shooting people as he goes. So you swipe left and right to avoid the obstacles and then tap on enemies to shoot at them as they go through. Swipe downwards to reload and then just keep going for as long as you possibly can.
Isn't it the wrong aspect ratio for an endless runner? It's like horizontal, not vertical.
I guess
because you're shooting, maybe.
Yeah, I assume people pop up the sides and flank you, I guess. But you're right, usually they take the kind of a portrait view, don't they, rather than landscape for an auto runner. But it is, it's an odd premium scheme, because it wants to be a freemium game, but I think you have to pay up front. It's 69p99 to buy, but you also...
Although that's not so weird, because that's what Brave was, wasn't it? Brave was...
Oh yeah, you paid for
Brave.
You can pay to improve your health, to boost your reflexes, to get new guns, to speed up coin collection, or you can pay to get the bloodstained vest from the first Die Hard movie. Wow,
some people.
Amazing. So yeah, plenty of options for you to avoid playing chunks of the game if that's what you really want from your games. Maybe by the sounds of it, it's probably better than the film. Even if it's a bit lame, it's probably still better than the film. But I don't know, we'll see. 69p99 if you want to take a look at that. What else? Redneck Revenge. It's one of those ones where you control a character on the left-hand side of the screen. You move him up and down on the edge of the screen, and you have to take out waves of enemies that come trawling from right to left towards you. It is obviously another zombie shooter, because, zombies. It's quite wacky looking. It's lots of almost like a fairground thing where there's a giant monster and little creatures are crawling out of its open mouth. 69p99. That's out actually at this very moment. So it's from the guys who did Saving Private Sheep.
Okay.
So if you liked that, maybe you'll be a fan of this. Yeah. Have you seen anything particularly that's caught your eye this week?
A few, yeah. I mean. Tower Defense is kind of a bit like Endless Runners, isn't it? But there's a Tower Defense called Royal Defense, which is from a Russian developer called 8th Floor.
Okay.
Which is, it's kind of, I think a well done, it's kind of like a kind of steampunky kind of art style, which is nice. I mean, I don't think necessarily it does anything that you wouldn't have seen before in Tower Defense games. It's got the usual kind of fixed placement and updates and stuff, but it's I thought it was fairly reasonable. There's a big free-to-play web game, so we've covered them a bit on the Biz site. I think it's their first mobile game. There's a company called Fifth Planet who are a bit like a Kabam, so they did kind of free-to-play online games for kind of a core audience. So
okay.
they're big game. They've got quite a few games, I think kind of four or five that have been going for years. And they've got, their biggest one is called Dawn of the Dragons.
Right.
So that's just gone live on iOS. I've been playing a bit of it. So I played a bit on the web and I got an early code for it. So, it's kind of pretty much the same. It's the same gameplay as on iOS as on the web, just with kind of new UI.
Uh-huh.
And I think it is, as I've probably said many times before, the whole car battling world is a bit confusing for me. And
yes,
a bit doddery in my old age. But so this is, I mean, it's playing, obviously all these games tend to have similar mechanics.
Yeah.
In terms of you're kind of like tapping on stuff and I mean this isn't a card battle, this is more of a kind of RPG thing, but you're doing a lot of tapping, but at least there's quite a strong kind of storyline behind what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of strong in terms of War and Peace, but strong in terms of kind of mobile games.
Yeah, there is a reason that you're doing these things.
Yeah, so it's and there is a big kind of like you know exploration kind of element to it, and typically there's PvP and there's got kind of guild and all this kind of stuff. So if you've tried some of the card battling ones or the kind of the Kabam games, it's probably worth checking out.
Does it have any kind of cross-platform multiplayer component, or is it just single?
No. So I mean, the issue they have with a lot of these games is if something, and it's exactly what Kabam did with Kingdoms of Camelot. If you've had a game that's been running for years and years and years, obviously you have some very high powered players in there. Mm-hmm. And if you suddenly start releasing it on iOS, you have a lot of very low power players, and mixing the two up together is not always a good plan.
Sure.
Unless you can kind of put some kind of gates in between them. This is just the iOS
crowd.
Yeah. And there was one. Was there one more? Let me have a think. No, maybe there wasn't. Oh, there's one more. Sorry.
Oh, go on. Go for it.
There's a very quickly. There's one called Dragon Up. So obviously dragons are quite popular in the casual gaming kind of sphere of things.
Who doesn't like dragons?
Who doesn't like dragons? So it's from a Canadian, from a Vancouver company called Eastside Games, best known for Dope. Is it Dope? Dope Farm, which is massive on Facebook. They're very interesting chaps. They're kind of like trying to do something different. So this is the headline for this one was Dragons That Barf Gold. So it's a very overly. I mean, it's like a dragon's.
It's a classic story.
Yeah, a kind of a dragon, not quite a Dragon Veil, but kind of obviously Dragon Veil is the very popular game in that kind of genre. Uh-huh. So it's kind of taking that love for dragons, but doing something a little So it's actually called. It's Kotaku said it's a dragon vomiting harvesting game. So so you're kind of Tamagotchi like collecting dragons and growing your dragons and
okay.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So but they're Eastside Games, they always have quite a lot of humour in their stuff, so it's free to play,
Fair enough. All right, plenty to be getting on with this week, loads of releases. Well, I have to find time because I've been playing a few games myself, as I'm sure you have. So we'll have a little chat about what we've been playing. What we've been playing! This week I have been playing Relic Rush. I mentioned it briefly earlier in the new releases. It is a pixel art auto-running platformer, but it's a single screen affair. I mean, it is about as retro as you can possibly get in terms of visual style. So if you think back to those, single things like Bubble Bobble, those single screen, very lo-fi platformers, basically you are cast as a little adventure explorer guy who's running around. Initially he's running around like tombs and jungles, but then it goes into like an Arctic area and then a fire area. Like I say, very retro, classic. Mm. Got to go through the hearth, wind and fire. And you come out of an entrance at the bottom of the screen, and then there are a series of platforms and ladders that you will traverse to get to an exit at the top, usually. You start moving the moment you go, so it's an auto runner, but rather than tapping the screen to jump, you actually put your finger on the screen to halt the little guy in his tracks, the benefit of which is you avoid crashing into enemies, things like jumping frogs and these weird lizards with kind of extending tongues, and later on you've got like yeti things and fireballs and all this stuff that needs to be avoided. Well, yeah, because later on there's an ice level, so I assume that they're like kind of abominable
snowmen.
That makes
sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, something like that. And it's like I say, it's a weird habit to kick because we've played so many of these things, like we talked about earlier, and you just want to tap to jump. And so whenever you tap and he just stops in his tracks, you're like, oh. And so it takes a little bit of adjusting and sort of getting used to. First of all, it looks like really nice if you're into pixel art. I mean, I know so many games are doing it now because it's retro and it's cool and all that sort of stuff.
It's cheap, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess so. But some of them, for what you would think of to be such a simple thing, often people get it very wrong. Like, there are sort of rules to doing pixel art, i.e. you have to have the consistent sized pixels or it doesn't look right. And there are purists, in this genre who are like, that's not
really?
A problem.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, there really are.
Just a few.
Exactly. And this one adheres really nicely to it. It does genuinely look like a proper kind of retro, 8-bit game. And if you're into that sort of thing, you will really like it. I find it quite charming when it's done right. And I was attracted by these because they looked very authentic, if you know what I mean. So by the method of having to tap to stop your little guys, a little bit weird to get used to at first, but once you're there, it's in. You'll have a series of things like frogs, which you have to avoid. They leap up and down on the spot, so you have to stop just before you hit them, wait till they jump, then release. You'll run underneath them. There is this thing that flicks out its tongue, so you have to stop just before its tongue comes out. Then as soon as it like kind of sucks the tongue back in, you want to let go and run. Jumping is handled by these little up arrows. So as soon as he runs into the arrow, he'll jump automatically. So you have to be aware of this and stop just before you hit the arrow, if you're waiting for something else on the other side to get out of the way. And then as soon as it stops jumping or whatever, you release it, hits the arrow, and he jumps. The level construction is interesting in as much as you're chasing down a relic. And the way that it works is there's a timer at the top of the screen, a timer bar that counts down. And you have to complete 8 levels in a single run within that time limit. And as the bar goes down, that will affect whether you get a gold or a silver or a bronze or just nothing at the end of the run. So the emphasis on being able to do speed runs where you just rocket through the whole thing in a ridiculously fast time. You'll die throughout. You can die as many times as you like. But obviously, if you want to take another run at the medal score, you have to go all the way back to the beginning and start again. Then it's quite nice because it does force you to pay attention for a while. Even playing through all 8 stages, you can get it through in like a couple of minutes. So it's not too long, but actually being able to play through the whole thing perfectly and get yourself a gold, that becomes a bit more tricky. Mm. On the negative side, it's a little bit repetitive at first, I found, because you're dealing with these jumping frogs, these lines of jumping frogs, where you can just let go and he'll run under them, and they kind of leap one after the other. So you kind of can, he races along, and just before he hits them, another one leaps up. And so on some levels, there's kind of very little input, but that's at the beginning and it's obviously guiding you through. So I would say that, you know, it might be a little bit off-putting, but once you start getting towards the end of the first stage and into the second world, which is an ice level, firstly all the aesthetics on the screen changes, the water beneath changes color, your little explorer guy gets a kind of Arctic hoodie thing, which is kind of cool. So it all changes, and then suddenly you're faced with yetis, which are throwing snowballs, and so you have to use a completely different tactic. And obviously the designs of the levels themselves become more complex. So it does start to ratchet up nicely. It's probably not going to change the world or anything. And it was, I say, built pretty much entirely by one guy. So it feels like a little micro one-man project. You'll have to be prepared to have your thumb on the screen for long periods of time. And if you accidentally shift off, you know, move your thumb off the screen or lose contact, then you'll, you know, wreck your whole run. So you have to sort of sit down in a steady place. Maybe not so good for the bus, where if it joggles around and you slip off, you might, you know, screw up your run. But I'd say it's a solid sort of 7 out of 10. If I was going to do that, it's nice, it's charming. 69p 99 cents. Relic Rush. Seek it out if you like a little bit of retro pixel art fun. But John, what have you been playing this week?
Yeah, what have I been playing? Nothing in any great depth, I have to confess. So,
have you been flitting about, moonlighting?
Well, yeah, I've been downloading lots of things just to see. Actually, from two games from Chinese companies that I've been playing recently. And I think the reason it's worth, you know, it's a really nice mechanic that you kind of you're doing match three, which everyone kind of knows, understands quite easily how to do, but yeah, with the colours or symbols, there's some tactical reasoning why you're doing it, particularly in some sort of turn-based battle scenario. That's kind of just quite interesting. But the really interesting thing is there's one that's just come out from Renren, who are a big, one of the really big Chinese online companies. Mm-hmm. And that's called Merlin's Rage. And obviously Merlin, not being very well known in China, I'm assuming they're targeting kind of Western markets.
That's got a great image, pissed off wizard.
And it's kind of interesting because that seems to be an HTML5 game, which, without getting too technical, means it's not, it's kind of like running as a web game.
Yeah, it's almost like
browser-ish. So you kind of think, and it's interesting because a lot of the DNA and GREE games, the card battling games, it's much quicker to develop using HTML5, but obviously you don't have the same graphical kind of
and often you don't have music,
you don't have audio. But it's just, even in this case, it's just a slight lag in the way that the kind of things happen is just quite off-putting, which is kind of, you kind of think it's surprising for that kind of game. You kind of think you could kind of get away with it, but obviously it's not happened. And the other interesting one is the one called Legend 4, which is from a Chinese company called but the interesting thing is, it'll come to me, the interesting thing is it's published by Kabam, who are one of these companies that I talk about quite a lot because I'm kind of interested in kind of, they're a web company that's come to mobile very successfully, so it's interesting to see what they're doing. But so they've published this game, and it just kind of came out a while ago, actually. I think it's kind of the start of the year, and they've not done any push on it. They've not done any marketing, and you can't even. They used to have a store in there, so you could buy stuff. And they've even taken the store out. So basically, just this game that's still live on the App Store, but seems to be some sort of experiment that's gone wrong.
Okay.
But it's actually really nice to play. I'm not very good at it. It's quite hardcore. I think it's like some of these Chinese games. It's designed that effectively you have to spend money quite early on if you want to get past the. I mean, I'm kind of stuck on, not stuck because you just replay, but I'm on the second level still, which is pretty embarrassing. Okay. Or second area. So I wonder if I have emailed them to ask what on earth's going on with it, because I think it's really a really nice game. It's kind of well presented and kind of interesting. But anyway, so there's those two, which I don't necessarily recommend that anyone goes to play. But there is one game that I have been playing a bit that is well worth playing. It's called Puzzle Retreat, from a Australian developer who called the Voxel Agents, who did Train Conductor, which was pretty successful a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
Really nicely presented, and their games are, I mean, I guess it's quite casual. This is like a puzzle game, but they're very, very well presented games. It's a Puzzle Retreat, 99 cents, 79p, and it's a puzzle game, as you can imagine. And basically, what it is you have like a wooden block with kind of like holes in it. So say a 3x3 block,
okay,
and then some of those blocks will be empty, and some of them will be full. And then on top of the full one, there'll be like an ice block, so you can slide it.
I see.
So basically, you're trying to fill all the empty holes in this block by flicking the ice. And obviously, as soon as you flick an ice into a hole, it will drop into it. But then, of course, you can flick ice over that one to fill another gap. But just very, very nicely presented. And they're just a company who I don't think it's been particularly successful. I think they need to rethink into how to do free to play, really. But but just really well presented. And a game that did come out a long time ago, but has an interesting. Update recently. So there's Stair Dismount from a Finnish developer who did Zedbound, whose name escapes me for the time being. Zenbound. They did Zenbound, but they've done this game Stair Dismount, which is just a effectively it's a ragdoll, 3D ragdoll falling down the stairs.
It sounds like it.
This came out years ago. This came out at least 2 years ago. But they've there's a new kind of video service called EverPlay, and basically it's when it's integrated into games, it records your footage, your gameplay footage. It records it automatically. And at any point, you can go, oh, that was a really good, that my ragdoll fell down the stairs in a really hilarious way, and just play stop, and then it will give you the clip. And then you can share it on Facebook, and it has its own, EverPlay has its own kind of sharing system.
Nice.
And there's also as part of this EverPlay system, they're also doing it will record what you're doing on your iPad or iPhone, and it will also use the front facing camera, so you can kind of like give commentary or pull funny faces, and that will put that in the footage. So
the bones that are broken.
Yeah, so not a new game at all, but an interesting way, and certainly for they're looking to do it. They're saying it's in another game called Ice Rage as well. Okay. So they're looking to more and more games will start using this kind of system, so you can post kind of brag clips and have you kind of like have your face in these kind of video footage. So I think it's just kind of a nice thing to play around with if you're interested in that kind of thing.
And slightly masochistic.
Well, yeah.
Well, that sort of wraps it up for this week, I suppose. If you like the sound of anything you've heard, go and head over to Pocket Gamer and check out the news. Pretty much everything we've talked about is covered on the site. Do have a look at our Game of the Week, which is going to be going up. Well, it will be up by the time you listen to this. So you can, there'll be some of the games we talked about today. Go and check it. Vote for it and let us know what you think should be the winner. And we'll talk about it more next week. Find us on Twitter at Pocket Gamer, and obviously check out the Facebook page too. We will be back next week for more news and information in the iOS vein. But until then, thanks for joining me, John, and we will catch up with you next week. Bye.
Goodbye.